This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Kicking off hour two here on Money Moves live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Lots to get to this hour. We'll break down the Major League Baseball card. We do have two games in action right now. Twins up 5-4 on the Orioles as we head into the bottom of the fourth inning. Your Phillies, unfortunately, down 1-0 right now. We still got a couple more innings left. Ain't over until it's over. Is JVT sweating out the Phillies in the first five? I thought that might be what you were sad about. Or maybe the fact we're about to talk about the Indianapolis Colts, maybe that was something you were sad about. No, there's something else that is weighing on your heart right now.
Yeah, my emotions have been all over the place. First off, I am really happy this morning when I find out Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is single. Good thing. All right, what's up? Shoot the shot. Also, it goes back down. Russell Westbrook is retiring.
Devastating.
How about this? That's sad. That's a terrible thing.
It's the end of an era, right, when, like, some of these names end up calling it.
100%. Look, first off, it's like an old thing, right, because it's, hey, look, mortality is real. We're all going to die one day. We'll be nothing but not even memories coming up here in about 50 years from now. Nobody's going to remember who you are or care about who you are. You'll be a forgotten. Your life will be meaningless. So that's part of it, right? You're just thinking about your impending mortality because time is slipping by. You could still be alive, by the way,
in 50 years. That's very reasonable.
Nah, that's true. You have children, your memory's not going to totally be gone.
I mean, actually, they don't like that video clip I keep playing for you
where that guy's like, I'm not like some dude in a cave 100 years ago. Like, brother, we had steam engines back then. But I think the whole point is that. But it's also because of the way the internet works, Russell Westbrook has become somewhat of a joke. And I don't think that's the case. Russell Westbrook was an awesome, awesome basketball player in his time, was explosive, was one of the best of his generation, won an MVP, was really just a fun basketball player to watch. And yes, we'll get the, you know, maybe big three version of Russell Westbrook, as Zach Cohen said in our little group chat. But I think for the most part, it's just kind of sad because he was a fun player, man. And it's just one of those guys. It's just like, it's a core part of my basketball memory. He played, do you know how many seasons he played, by the way? 18. Wow. I didn't realize it was that many. Just stinks. So end of an era. Russell Westbrook retiring. I'm sad.
All right. Now let's make you sad about something else. Time to preview the Indianapolis Colts as our NFL training camp tour continues.
Join Stormy and JVT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
Woo-hoo. Let's watch the car move from one location to the next. Very short trip from Cincinnati over to Indy.
A little dramatic.
It's so fun, though. I genuinely love our crew and the work put in to make that
graphic. Did you guys put JJ in it yesterday or the last 2 days?
No, I was so mad. So we still tossed to it. And yeah. I even said, I was like, this is my bad for not getting ahead of this. Yeah. It would have been hilarious to just like superimpose JJ's head
on
your body.
She was mad at you guys.
Body.
You guys don't do enough.
I was mad at myself, excuse you, but no, Rob Moreno did a great job with that bad boy. Obviously, Michelle in graphics, who makes all the really cool creative stuff, very fun. But let's talk about this Indianapolis Colts team, because while a lot of the reports from the media and that we've seen coming out of training camp to this point and all of the commentary coming out of Colts camp from Shane Steichen, various teammates of Daniel Jones, all the expectations are that, hey, we're ready to go, and he's going to be full go come week one of the NFL season is the feel that they have been giving off. The practice performance has been going strong to this point. You, however, do not appear to be a believer.
No. I mean, look, okay.
Is this like negative fan?
No, he tore his Achilles in December. I mean, he tore it on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. It is August 12th, and we're talking about him being just fine?
Yeah.
And I understand, yeah, because I was thinking about this on the way in. I understand that there are advancements in medical technology and the way that these procedures are done and the recovery is changing so that these guys are recovering quicker than ever before. And we have seen them all come back. But I think it would be foolish to assume that he is just going to come right back. And to me, that is actually the most interesting part. It's not so much the prevailing thought, Stormy, that he could come back and be okay. I actually am kind of buying into that a little bit more. I think there's going to be some limitations. Will they use pistol more? Because again, you know, just the mobility, the inability to go from under center to hand it off, things like that. Mm-hmm. Will you have to change things like that at the beginning of the year? I think so. We had observed this during our shows on Sundays. The Daniel Jones anytime touchdown type things, I think that's out the window because guess who's the quarterback sneak option now? It's Tyler Warren. It is not Daniel Jones. So I think that's out the door because you don't want to put that on him and his ankle and his lower body.
He had, what, 5 rushing touchdowns last year,
I think? Something like that. And we, like we said, we talked about it. One of the first games, it was when he injured his leg initially, not the Achilles. they were using Tyler Warren in those quarterback sneaks, and I think that's going to be their option now. What I kind of am somewhat surprised by is people are looking at this Colts team, and I think a lot of people are assuming they're going to be able to recreate those first 8 weeks of the season, those first eight games. I just don't think that's the case. So many things went right for them in that eight-week stretch, that eight-game stretch, where I just don't know if you're going to be able to recreate that. There's a bunch of good stats out there that are floating out. Mina Kimes, in her podcast, talked about this in the AFC South preview. The fact that this Colts team generated so many explosive plays on first down, they had an over 50% rate of play action, so they were getting really aggressive on first downs. So those really worked out for them, but teams adjusted, and they started to take that away, and the offense started to dry up a little bit, as we saw in the second half of the season. It wasn't like John Mateer. I wrote about this in the guide with Mateer, where you know I have my questions about Mateer, but as I put in the guide for the College Football Guide, you cannot deny the clear line of demarcation.
Correct.
Good start, injury, bad finish. For the Colts, there was not that really clear line. There was just a really good start, and then you're like, oh, like the turnover-worthy plays are starting to increase here a little bit, and oh, all of a sudden now, you know, you're starting to see the passing game dip off, and then there was Achilles injury. And that, to me, I think is one of the biggest questions about this offense.
Do you think any of that, though, paired with the hairline fracture, though, that was leading up to it in those previous handful of games?
It could, but I will say this as somebody, and I'll invoke the same thinking with Mateer. You have the clear line of demarcation. You have the leg injury for Daniel Jones. Does the leg injury then cause you to commit 9 turnover-worthy plays in 2 games, right? Does it cause you to commit 11 in your last 5? That, to me, is something where we've seen that problem with Daniel Jones before. I don't know if that affects the way you're putting the ball in danger down the stretch. And that, to me, is going to be the really big question. They should be a good offense. I'm not saying they're going to drop off a cliff, but this kind of belief that I am seeing that they're going to kind of come back and just be nearly the team. Like, I'll put it this way. Offensively, what's more likely? That they're closer to the team they were at the start of the year or that they were before Daniel Jones tore his Achilles? And I think it's more likely they're closer to the team that they were before he tore his Achilles.
For those who might not remember the first 8 weeks that JVT's talking about, they were 7-1, led the NFL in points per game average, just shy of 34 points per game, 385 total yards per game, also best in the league. Daniel Jones ended the season when he got hurt with career highs in yards per pass attempt, QBR, off-target percentage, and completion rate. Colts were 0-4 in the games he didn't start. The collapse was one of the worst in NFL history after that. They were the first team ever to be 6 games over 500, finished with a losing record, first team since 95 to start 8-2 or better and miss the playoffs, and the first team to start 7-1 or better and finish with 8+ losses. So the decline we saw the back half of the season was something that we either had never seen before mm-hmm. or haven't seen since the 90s. It was that significant. Currently, when you look at the AFC South big picture, Texans are in the driver's seat from an odd standpoint, +110 division favorites. The Jags, who I have made my pitch to you as the team I see coming out of this division, +245, and then the Colts after that, +380 with a 7.5 win total. In terms of the total wins, you might not be high on this team, but do you see them being able to reach 8? Like, how do you view them in terms of the market?
I think they're relatively well-priced in that sense. I mean, we're higher, the two of us are, on the Titans, so I think that would push them down a little bit in my own personal rankings. I lean toward the under because as we focus so much on the offense as we usually do, I think the other question becomes, like, what is this defense? Part of the changes for this team in terms of personnel, a lot of it happened on the defensive end. Nick Cross, who played over 1,100 snaps from last year, is gone. Quiddy Pay, 721 snaps, 38 pressures, is gone. He's actually here in Las Vegas. Samson Ebicom, who played 416 snaps at 23 pressures, he's gone. Even Neville Gallimore, who's with the Chicago now, I believe, 467 snaps played along the defensive interior, he's gone. So you're really trying to recreate some of this. Is Lyle Tulatu going to take a next step as an edge rusher? He had 8.5 sacks. He led the team with 61 pressures, but he's not a dominant force there. And what if Charvarius Ward is not as good at the corner spot? What if he has those issues again? What if C.J. Allen, there's a lot of questions about him as a sideline-to-sideline, especially in coverage-type guy. What if that doesn't work? At the middle linebacker position as a rookie, I think you really start to then poke holes in what this team is defensively, and they're a pretty average group. So if the offense isn't anywhere near what everybody expects it to be, and it's closer to what I think it could be, then all of a sudden you're looking at a team that defensively is probably not going to hold its own. And a schedule, I think, presents some relatively tough challenges, especially at the beginning of the year. I mean, look at that first 3-game stretch. Would it really be unrealistic if they start 0-3?
No, and to pair that up, like, what is your expectation for us? We've talked so much about the Daniel Jones injury, but what about the Alec Pierce injury with this left ankle taking longer to recover than we expected? I saw the comments from general manager Chris Ballard yesterday saying, Like, he's on target, he's making great progress. The expectation is he's going to be ready for week one, but at what capacity? Because he's your downfield threat. Like, he's the option you have to stretch the field.
I mean, downfield threat, he's like everything. Yeah,
he's your everything.
Outside of Tyler Warren, and this isn't to call you, can you name a wide receiver on this team? You just did research, so you probably can.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? The whole point here is, all right, what are we looking at here? Josh Downs, I like him. I'm a hardcore Colts fan. But then you have Ashton Doolin. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, right? Anthony Gould. You still have Laquan Treadwell out there playing football for teams, and he's out there. He's been around the league for a long time. This is not an overtly impressive wide receiver.
Well, and my thought, too, because, like, Jonathan Taylor gets paid, and obviously he's going to still be great on the ground, you would expect, but he, in the pass game, is the short yardage stuff. You're going to have a few of those guys that can do that short to mid-range, but if you want to be able to have those options downfield, like, it is Alec Pierce.
Yep. I think that, and I think it was well put as somebody, but it's almost like in a basketball game, Steph Curry. Steph Curry is gravity, right? In the sense of you always have to account for him on the floor. He's going to attract some extra attention.
Yeah, you can't have the defense all in tight.
Yep, and so with Alec Pierce, even if he's not out there, even from just a pure reception standpoint, his presence then allows you as a defense to be a lot more loose with what you're looking at. You're not as broken up. So I think the whole point here is, I think under on the Indianapolis Colts win total is worth looking at. I also think there's some markets like DraftKings has them, team to finish better than in terms of records, playing like a Titans dynamic, something like that. The Raiders, I think, is an interesting one too. But I'm not buying the positivity for the most part with this team.
So no comeback player of the year at 12-1 for Daniel Jones, and especially not a 90-1 MVP. That's what I'm getting at for you. Reminder, no.
He was not an MVP candidate last year. I'm not saying they didn't say that.
Yes.
I'm saying they were absolutely wrong
Correct.
To say that. Yes.
We have referenced the NFL betting guide. It is out now. You do, however, have to be a VSIN Pro subscriber to get access to it. VSIN.com/subscribe is how you can join us. Sign up for as little is $9.99 or join us on a full-time annual subscription. You're getting 50% off right now. Jump to it.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Money Moves preseason football is back, and it's time to book your trip to Vegas because it's also contest season, ladies and gentlemen. And Winner's Circle Proxy is VSIN's preferred proxy service. After your required in-person registration, they handle the weekly submissions throughout the season, so you can make your picks anytime, anywhere. One trip to Vegas, you can play all season long. Schedule your appointment today at winnerscircleproxy.com. That's winnerscircleproxy.com. We had our Colts NFL training camp tour breakdown last segment. Tomorrow we will be stopping in Detroit. Curious to get your opinion tomorrow when you break everything down on the Cade Mays injury, how that might impact things, if the Lions can still overtake that schedule regardless early on, all that good stuff. That'll be fun.
Alone, yes.
Alone. You could have some friends.
Stormy's not going to be here tomorrow or Friday.
Final or vacation Monday. Of the year.
Third of the year, yes.
Yes.
That's
I don't take time off for like 6 months, so.
I never do.
Yes, you do. You just got back from vacation 2 days. No, so no. Enough out of you. Let's get into a little Major League Baseball, shall
we? Not really a vacation.
How's your Phillies game going, by the way?
Phillies have tied it up 1-1. But as somebody who laid a half run here in the first five, would need Wheeler to get out of this, has the leadoff guy on with no outs. And he will generate a double play, it looks like. So we get two outs, need Wheeler to get out of it. That is not going to be a double play. So we will have one out with a runner on. But also need some more scoring from the Phils as they laid a half run with them in the first five.
One of a few tight contests in the early going here. Twins and Orioles, one run game there as well in the fifth right now with the Orioles trailing. Twins -260 on the live line if you want to lay the run in half. Think they can extend this lead +120 the price. And the Rays and A's, we're officially underway. Scoreless there early, though. We're just getting started.
Burying the lead a bit there in the sense that the run total has already pushed, even though that we are early.
That is true.
Yeah, 5-4. Close at 9.
Nailed it. Early scoring. We love to see it. The next game that we have set to get underway in about 30 minutes or so, Rockies and Diamondbacks going head-to-head here. Merrill Kelly going for the home D-backs, minus 174 on the money line here. Ryan Feltner on the other side getting plus 162 on the Rockies. Run total there, 9. Juice on the over, though, minus 117.
Yes, and I'm very interested for many different reasons, but obviously that would be the top one. The price here on one Merrill Kelly, we've seen a little bit of buy-in on Colorado, and I believe that to be the side to back. Kelly's been interesting. If you look at his last 7 starts there, Storm, 38 and a third, and 282 is the ERA, 282. He's been pitching relatively well, has not allowed more than 2 earned runs in all but 1 outing over those 7. Now, that one was pretty ugly. It was on the road against Cleveland over 5 innings, gave him 5 earned runs, struck out 5, walked 4. Whole point here being is that at some point, Merrill Kelly should probably pay for the transgressions upon which he has committed. You look at this overall, the expected numbers for him over the stretch that we're talking, 564 expected ERA, 446 fielding independent. The command rate over this stretch has been wonky at best. You look at it from a walk rate standpoint, walking just about 11% of the batters that he has faced. From a contact standpoint, barrel rate of nearly 10%, hard hit rate of nearly 50%, and yet he has that ERA of 282. You could see why the expected numbers are where they're at. So then when you see the overnight of like, ah, you know, I know the Diamondbacks are playing well and they're, you know, they're a playoff team, but a $180 with the way that Kelly is playing. I think that at that price tag, when you were looking at plus 155 for the Rockies or better, something worth looking at. And that's where the market has kind of come in on here. So I think Rockies are the play, especially trying to go up against him. Now, Feltner is not somebody really to write home about. 571 ERA, 574 fielding independent. You can understand why the Rockies are dogs, considering everything we know about them. But I think this is more about the pricing with what you're laying with Kelly than anything else. So market's moving against Arizona just a skosh, and I would agree with that totally.
Split series so far. See if you can get the dog home in Colorado to win the set. Outside of their win over the Royals, it would be their first series won here in the second half. A bit of an unexpected series win. San Diego took the first 2 against Milwaukee. Can they make it a sweep today? Robbie Ray on the hill for San Diego. Dustin May on the other side. Padres, like I said, up 2-0 in the series and on a nice little run here. They've won 4 straight, 5 of their last 6 since opening the second half when they were 2-5. 14-4 since. Can they keep it going today, you think?
I don't know. Do you have something here? These are your boys.
I don't, but it's just I found it interesting considering all the hype around Milwaukee and them having the best record in baseball right now. Obviously a favorite here not to get swept, but that San Diego's been able to handle business how they have recently. Can they keep it going?
And the debut for Robbie Ray did not go particularly well. Old Robbie Ray popped up, especially those walk issues that he has had throughout his career. Walked 5 and just struck out 2 against Houston. So maybe a little bit of a bounce back, or maybe karmic justice for the Padres, and he is just going to absolutely hit the skids now as we move forward. Some of the expected numbers for Ray have been there, and we've always talked about this. You know, you've got to be able to balance out some of the command issues with the ability to strike guys out. Ray, in the early goings of his career, has been able to do that. Generally, throughout his time in the majors, has been like a double-digit strikeouts per 9 guy and balancing out those command issues. But as you get a little bit older, those things tend to fade a bit. And this year, one of those years where the walk rate is pretty high, if you look at it from the perspective of his career, 11.5%, and the swinging strike rate, all those swing and miss numbers, a little bit down. So maybe starting to finally catch up with him here a bit. But I think from the way that this is getting priced, if you wanted to take a stab with Ray and expect that he can maybe revert back to the form that we saw in a Giants uniform to an extent, I think you could be down with that. $120 on the road right now?
The Detroit Tigers, so obviously they sell their biggest asset at the deadline, moving off of Tarek Skubal. He has struggled a little bit in a Dodgers uniform in his 2 early starts. Meanwhile, Detroit, all they do is win, it seems, lately since July 31st. They're 8-2. They enter today's second game with the Guardians at, 3 straight now, 4 of the last 5. This is a team that I think has been pretty interesting. Best run differential in baseball since that trade as well. Is this a team that you think is worth buying in on all of a sudden again?
You know, it's funny. So I think, was it Adam? I think it was Burke who, when we had him in post-trade deadline, said that he thought the Tigers were still going to make it into the postseason. Might have been Will or both. But either way, look, they've still got enough pieces to potentially make this push. And as we've talked about 1,000 times over, the American League stinks. So I don't think it would be a shock if the Tigers were able to thread the needle, sell Tarek Skubal also still making it into the postseason and seeing what they do here. I think the more interesting thing is, I've talked about this with Foster Griffin all year long and expecting, like, hey, let's try to catch the falling knife. Let's bet against Foster Griffin. Let's see if the regression happens. Never have successfully done it. And then I'm like, you know what? I give up. And then his last two starts, 11 earned runs over the course of 9 1/3, and has been absolutely getting smoked here over the last couple of starts, including his debut as a Guardian against the New York Mets. So maybe this regression is finally starting to hit. I mean, his numbers are starting to even out, especially after those last two outings. 3.31 ERA, 4.08 on the expected. So maybe not anything crazy really there for Griffin. So maybe he'll bounce back. But Griffin's been one of those guys that I feel like has been getting away with it, especially when you look at his penchant for giving up home runs. So maybe this is a little bit more accurately priced. We saw the overnight here at $1.23 in favor of Valdez and the Tigers. A little bit of movement here toward the Guardians, depending on where you look and shop for your numbers. But I think this seems to be as priced as well. But I wanted to bring this up because of the Griffin regression potentially hitting, but also the fact that this Tigers team might be able to do the two things, sell and also make it to the postseason.
Only a half game out of that final wild card spot where things sit right now. Plus 155 on Detroit to make the playoffs, minus 185. However, to miss. Meanwhile, let's keep it in the American League. Big series for both the Mariners and Yankees today.
I bring this up. I laugh because, Stormy, I don't know if you know this, but at times I will hold grudges and remember things that people will tell me.
How much you hate the Seattle Mariners. Yes, I remember it well.
What do you remember?
You screaming at everybody, like, don't tell me this is the best team in baseball.
And what happened? What happened when I screamed about that? Well, and not only that, but we posted a clip up on our social media at VSiN Live on Instagram, and somebody decided to comment on that video.
Well, didn't they win that day?
They hit like four bombs against the Dodgers and like went out and won immediately. And somebody was like, they hit home, five home runs last night and beat the best team in baseball. Excuse me. Let's see. The brother Rod Meyer. What's going on? Huh? Because last time I checked, this team completely sucks. Really deep in the wild card race now, many, many games back. The offense has been absolutely awful. We have talked about this 1,000 times over. They can't really hit anything. And the pitching has been wildly overrated, it would seem, time and again. Mike Palm has brought this up over and over again with this Mariners team. Seemed to be really slipping. And then you get Bryce Miller here today. On the surface, my guy should be untouchable. And the expected ERA, because he doesn't give up a ton of hard contact, 274. ERA is 308. Maybe some positive regression, but two out of the last three starts for him, what has he given up? Five earned runs on the road against Texas. Four earned runs against the aforementioned Tigers. Miller has been one of many pitchers for this team that has been inconsistent. He's given up four-plus earned runs in three out of his last five starts. What in the world are you supposed to trust here? And you get Warren on the other side. Look, Warren has been, I think, pretty okay for the New York Yankees. He at least gives you something where consistency is the key. You know what you're going to get out there. As long as you get some run support, Warren could be a guy worth looking at. And doesn't have a penchant for giving up a ton of home runs, fielding independence at 385. All of this to say is, $1.24, I know Miller has been good for the larger sample size, but seems kind of cheap, just given what we know about this Mariners team and how bad the lineup has been. But just wanted to say I told you so.
Yeah, so they're now fighting for their life to get into the playoffs. Four games back of that third and final wild card spot. Enter tonight on a five-game skid. Lost six of their last seven. Meanwhile, Yankees obviously well in control of an AL wild card bid.
By the way,
chasing the Rays for the AL East. I don't know if they can get there, though. Time's running out. Six games back.
After the Mariners lost their last game, what do you think I did? Just went on Instagram and liked that comment.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, well, basically the same concept. I thought you were going to get on Twitter and do something. That's like you screenshot, you save all of those comments.
Not everything.
Your favorite thing. It's in the NFL, injury updates coming fast and furious as NFL training camps roll on. We'll tell you the latest from San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan and Clay Kubiak keep telling everybody they're not concerned about this Christian McCaffrey injury. Should they be? Plus their counterpart for Los Angeles in week one. They've got some updates for you as well. Stick around.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Now, I teased before the break that we were going to talk plenty of NFL injuries, and we are, but I did see some news come down a little bit ago in college football that I think is worth noting. Jordan Davison, standout running back, the top returning running back for the Oregon Ducks this year, broke his collarbone at the end of last season in the playoffs, and there were questions about, you know, his return to play and all of that stuff. Apparently he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks to start the season. So that's massive blow. I mean, you still have D.R. Hill in the backfield, obviously, but that's 15 touchdowns that you had on the ground last year that you're not going to have available to you early on in the season. I think Oregon's still set up pretty darn well, but especially with the revamped offensive line and all that stuff, at least a little bit of an early concern.
Yeah. Especially, you know, the change of coordinator. I still think you're right, and there's been a lot of talk about that, that Oregon actually might be the real best team in the Big Ten, but you don't really like that, obviously. And then you have the change of coordinator.
It's not my favorite thing I've heard, especially after you weren't here on Monday, but I did the whole call me crazy, but this is the year for the Oregon Ducks. So I'm very much so riding that train.
I think they'll still win a lot of games.
I think so, too. Also, the new coordinator thing, I saw Jeff Schwartz tweeting about this the other day, that the DC change in particular, let's not freak out as much about not having Tosh Lupoi anymore. It's Dan Lanning's defense. Like, it always has been, still going to be. The offensive coordinator side, maybe, yes, that's where you have more of the concern. But as I said on Monday, it's like people are forgetting how much love Kenny Dillingham had as the OC. And then when he left, everyone's like, okay, well, what's this going to look like with Will Stein? I think that worked out pretty well. And clearly Dan Lanning has a trust internally with elevating somebody from the inside. So I'm going to stay optimistic.
But what are the chances that you can continue to get that?
I mean,
as you promote internally constantly, right?
Well, it's not a new voice. It's not an unfamiliar face. It's not a guy who doesn't get what you want to run coming in. It's somebody who's been learning under that tutelage. So
sure.
I think it's something I think it's something that can continue more than perhaps other places.
I think so too. All right. We'll see. I mean, cause I was going to say, but I mean, he was actually, cause I wanted to look it up to make sure I was correct, but I was not going to be correct. Cause I was talking about, my first thought was the Buccaneers, right? How you go through offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. First one's great. And then you go get another one. It's like, second one's great. And then now it's like, I don't know. We had to get rid of the Lazard guy, and now we're on another one. But Canales was not internally promoted. He was actually hired from the Seahawks. He was the quarterback's coach.
So another injury of note as we shift gears to the National Football League. Yesterday, right as we were getting off the air, we saw the news come down that Rams wide receiver Puka Nacua left practice early out there in L.A. With the training staff. Per NFL Network's Ian Rappaport this morning, it was minor soreness in his groin, and so he just left practice out of an abundance of caution. But I bring this up not only from an injury standpoint, but also the recent report from Adam Schefter that Nacua could be still facing potential discipline at the very beginning of the season. He said it's a very real possibility that he could miss that week one game in Australia against the 49ers.
I mean, I don't think grand scheme of things it matters in the sense of if the injury's not that serious and if it's a single game, then you're fine, right? That's not really going to deter you too much if you like the Rams. Where I think this becomes interesting is obviously offensive player of the year, right? I mean, he almost won it a season ago, had a really strong end to the year. For offensive player of the year this year, he is up there. You have Jahmyr Gibbs at FanDuel plus 650, the favorite. Bijan Robinson 9-1, Ja'Marr Chase 10-1, and the Nacua is at 13. So maybe getting behind the eight ball is also going to be a little bit of an issue. That to me is going to be the big concern. You're not like running away from Los Angeles. It's just whether or not that one game is going to make a difference here if you're Nacua, if he indeed misses it for whatever reason.
Miles Garrett also didn't practice yesterday. Knee swelling. It's his fourth missed practice of camp. But Sean McVay did say, similar with him, just erring on the side of caution, he's going to be good and ready to go. The Rams open the preseason on Saturday, while the bulk of games are on Thursday, and they are not playing starters. So just an update in that one for them against Kansas City. Their week one opponent, though, the San Francisco 49ers. We mentioned in passing earlier all of the injuries that they're going through right now. It is a lot, but the one that I am most concerned of about, at least most recent history, is this Christian McCaffrey tightness issue that he has. And I've been reading all of the quotes from Clay Kubiak. Kyle Shanahan even said yesterday when he was asked if he had any concern about McCaffrey's tightness right now, quote, no, my concern would be him toughing through the tightness like a lot of people do and then hurting something bad, pulling something, which then it could be a month. Christian's a guy who needs to get prepared for week one. We're confident in what he's done these 2 weeks, and we just want to make sure we don't make it something to be concerned about. I like that answer. However, you can't help but feel the shades of 2024 when he had calf tightness and it was, oh, it's day to day. And then it was, oh, it's week to week. And then he doesn't show up for God knows when.
But also, can you be positive? Wasn't it shades of 2025 in which he had some concerns going into the season too, and then played a bajillion snaps?
It is actually the craziest thing in the world to me that the 49ers had all the injuries they did last year, and then he was the guy that stayed healthy and played all 17 games.
Him and Stafford, right? We were talking about the worry for both of them. And then Stafford was in some weird chamber and getting some red light therapy or whatever it was, and then Christian McCaffrey.
But what I'll say is, especially given the fact that he is such a workhorse and he's utilized on the ground and in the pass game, and he is the straw that stirs the drink, all of those cliches that you want to use about what he does for this offense, that running back room is dealing with a lot of injuries right now. Jordan James has a fractured rib. Kalon Black dealing with a groin. Isaac Rendo has a torn pec. Like, everybody behind him is banged up right now, too.
So your team's screwed.
It's not great. Not great, Bob. And then we get the news, too, that Nick Bosa, who coming back from the ACL and has only been doing individual drills anyways, is now has like tendonitis or soreness there. So that's not great. And I just feel like it's a CVS receipt, essentially, of all of the guys that are banged up right now. Mike Evans did get back on the field yesterday, so that's a positive.
What do you think this means for them in the preseason? Because I think you're kind of holding out hope that a lot of these – right, that's what I mean, though, right? Yeah. So, like, would they be a pure fade here in the preseason as we move forward? Because I think big picture, regular season, you're kind of holding out that a lot of these guys are generally going to be fine. But Tennessee's up to like a 4.5, 5-point favorite against them tomorrow in that one of the late games. I think it is the late game, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Market is clearly kind of playing against them, given all the injury concerns. But maybe we're getting a lot of whack, but they can't be playing much.
Well, and the Titans are going to play their guys at least to start.
Yep.
And that is a team that, because of the struggles that they've had in the last couple of years, are wanting to be better, yeah. Right? New coach, new situation, guys trying to earn jobs. I think that's completely reasonable. I would not have any interest in San Francisco.
Yeah. It's funny. I always like this, and we'll see how high it gets, but I always find it funny this time of year because you'll hear coaches outwardly say, like, yeah, we need some guys to eat some reps.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being that guy. Like, yeah, you're here so your body can absorb the punishment and so we can save these other guys.
Sure.
I know you're trying to get a job and putting stuff on film, but still, it has got to be disheartening to hear, like, no, you're here because we need you to take that physical punishment.
Well, point well made. But I'll also say, too, and not to walk too much down narrative street because it's the NFL preseason and these fake football mm-hmm. games, but Robert Saleh, probably, like, it would be fun for him to beat the 49ers. Like, I know it's not a regular season game, but maybe there's a little bit of a layer to it.
Take some revenge. Like, let's go. I mean, I think the electrical substation is exacting the revenge for Robert Saleh himself. But it's not. Is it revenge? I mean, did they not want him?
No, it's not revenge. Yeah, I mean, he was their DC.
Right. It's more of like a friendly thing, right? So maybe it's the opposite.
Yes, it's just kind of fun to be like, oh, like, you're my buddy, and I'm going to try to one-up you. Like,
or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he sees what they're going through, and he's like, I'll hand you this dub.
No. Robert Saleh isn't, despite what you might have seen with the Jets, he's not a let's hand you this
I'll let you guys win. I understand your bodies are being wreaked havoc by the electrical waves that are happening out there. I'll let you guys win this game. I feel bad for you.
We talked about all of the injuries that are piling up for the Chicago Bears earlier this week, most notably in the secondary. And while we knew safety Kobe Bryant had an injury, we didn't fully know the depth of it. Initial report said maybe 2 to 3 months. Well, they got the worst end of that post-surgery this week. He's now expected to miss 4 to 6, and for a guy you bring in to really help shore up the back end, not ideal.
No, not at all. And for a team that has these expectations too, but all the indicators that there's potentially some regression, that timeline, I saw that this morning. It's like, ooh, that is really, really rough for this group. So, hey, mate, look, you make a little bit of a run, maybe you can bring them back and you'll have that impact near the end of the year, but you cannot expect that is something you can hang your hat on. And also, I mean, if you buy that Minnesota is going to be better with their new starting quarterback, this is a very difficult division. And any little thing, even an injury like this, where it's not going to move your power rating that much, if at all, could make a difference for you.
And you know what? Forgive me because you weren't on with us yesterday, but maybe we can talk this through a little bit more in the next segment. I haven't really heard your opinion now that Kyler Murray is officially QB1. I know you don't love 9 in general.
I never said I don't love him. I just never really got the overwhelming hype, despite with the lack of evidence.
But would love to hear your opinion on that and the NBA schedule news too. We can discuss, as you are one of our resident NBA hype men. Before we move too far off of Chicago, though, last 90 seconds, another quote that's been making the rounds today from Ben Johnson, following an article coming out in The Athletic, that he has talked about offensively wanting to be the highest scoring offense ever. Wants to supersede the 2013 Denver Broncos. And he said, I know exactly how many points they scored per game. I want to surpass them. I want shutouts. I want blowouts.
Now, that's crazy.
Who doesn't want those things?
Well, just given the way the game is going, 2013 is the highest scoring offense.
37.9 points per game.
That game where that team was freaking awesome. I didn't realize that was still the highest scoring team in the NFL's history.
Yeah.
55 touchdown passes for Peyton Manning that year.
Dang, was it that? Yeah, I mean, right? That's the number.
Look at that. Like a steel trap. I remember everything.
That's you. Any other quick injury?
No, I was wrong. It was 49. It was 49.
What's the...
No, hold on. That's 2004. I got to scroll down farther. Yeah, 55. Yeah.
Steel trap. There you go.
Yeah.
Redemption. Okay. Well, now we ran out of time. I was going to ask if there were any other injuries that interested you, but
my knee is hurting a little bit, a little sore.
Dude, I told you last week I had another pop out.
No. You showed us a video that was disgusting. The elbow tendonitis, not going anywhere. Not good for your boy.
Oh no. So the Jensen technique.
I had to get off of it because I was, on vacation. So we're restarting it. We're buying rice today. We're going to buy some rice.
What a letdown. Yep. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we are just about out of here. Thanks for hanging with us today as we bring you back to Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Still lots to discuss, though, in the last 15 minutes or so, including, and I apologize for not bringing this up with you, but we got the news yesterday, the NBA schedule release. We know the opening night games. We know the Christmas Day games. And some pretty good, fun, interesting matchups, too. Were you excited?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know me. If basketball's in the air, I'm excited. I'm ready for the season to start. I mentioned I was doing a spot with one of our affiliates in Missouri this morning. Preparation for the NBA season is right around the corner. Yeah. NBA guide's probably going to get started here in the next, month? If that. I know Zach's out there in Europe right now, but that will get started. So basketball is closer than we think it is.
You just finished your NFL write-ups, and as soon as the season starts, you're going to be starting your NBA.
Yeah, I'll be down with it. But I'm excited for this year. This should be fun. I would disagree with our colleague Will Hill, as he says, this regular season has the most juice it's ever had. Every year's got juice, and I think this year is going to be a ton of fun. Watching LeBron in his penultimate season, it would seem, with the 76ers on. Speaking of which, part of that opening night, look, we got to stop complaining about everything. Who cares that the Celtics are playing 3 p.m. Eastern time or whatever it is?
I like it. Day basketball. Right. I'm rolling.
And I mean, Stormy, I don't know if you know this, the NFL tends to play on Thursdays.
It's true.
And so I think you want to start to capture some early magic with some of those too. And I know that it's earlier in the week, but I think what you're trying to establish here is, the fact that you want that Europe audience, they've truly tried to get there. So I'm excited for it. I think it'll be a ton of fun.
Opening night, Celtics, Pistons, Thunder, Spurs, and then LeBron's debut with the 76ers that night as the Knicks lift their championship banner at MSG. So a really fun card there. Christmas, I think, and I'm curious your opinion on this, still going to be a struggle, even though it has long been the NBA's day. With the NFL slate that they have, Packers, Bears, Bills, Broncos, Rams, and Seahawks. I know on the surface last year it looked like we were going to have great games too, and then they ended up not all being that way. However, this certainly looks like a pretty fun Christmas Day slate, and it'll be an interesting head-to-head, I think, still to say the least.
What's the late Christmas game in the NFL?
Rams Seahawks.
Okay, good. I only say that because, man, we just keep – the meme online?
Oh, Nuggets Warriors, you don't care about at all.
Well, because you know the meme online of like that dog whose like hind legs don't work and he's like slowly just digging in the sand? That's the NBA just dragging Steph Curry out again and this Warriors team for one more Christmas Day game. Like, man, brother, they're done. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be a good team. They're a playing team. It sucks. That's why I keep saying, like, Curry deserves to be shipped off to a team that can actually put him in position to win. But, I mean, come on. We're going to keep rolling this carcass of a team out. Like, and by the way, I told this to David Jensen this morning. I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts. You know how you do those advertisements where you have the image of like the two stars, right? So it'll be like Nikola Jokic and Steph Curry coming up next. It's going to be these two. I'm willing to bet it's going to be Nikola Jokic and Brandon Pajemski because they get so injured. They are beat up. They're old. Just stop rolling them out there. Enough is enough. Just let them die.
You're so positive. On Christmas, too, which I know you hate. You hate the phrase of the unofficial start of the NBA season. Pay attention from October.
Yeah, I gave Dave crap for that this morning. He was like, he was like, to me, the season starts at Christmas. I was like, well, Dave, you're missing about a month and a half of basketball. And I think you're a little behind the eight ball by the time Christmas comes around. Especially you have the NBA Cup prior, all that sort of stuff. But I know somebody's screaming, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it does. In the NBA this year is going to be a ton of fun, and as we talk about it, I'm excited for the NHL season too. I think that October sports for us bettors, I think that's like the best time of year. I know we have the equinox that happens around that time of year too, but college football, NFL, hockey gets started, basketball started, college basketball, like, dude, we have so much going on at that time of year, and I absolutely love it. And I'm a winter guy, I'm still kind of big, but as a hefty guy, it's better to be out and about in winter. I have a new hoodie this weekend.
The mental load can be challenging for me at times, but I would rather have too much going on than not a lot.
I'm so nice to you.
So rude. I love winter too, by the way. You know I'm a big turtleneck person.
I'm
very excited.
No, nobody's going to care. What? We've had the turtleneck conversation before. Maybe I can wear turtlenecks this year.
Could you not?
That was a little too hefty in the jowls, you know? Like, you couldn't, like,
that's
big
such
guys.
A weird thing to say.
No, it's serious. Fat guys can't wear turtlenecks. You can't do it. If you've got the double chin going,
I guess I've never
you can't
really thought
be a fat
it.
Guy and wear a turtleneck. You just can't.
I love a turtleneck or a mock turtle.
So, one of my big goals is to be like Mitch Moss and to rock a turtleneck regularly. That is what I'm wearing. I'm not trying to regularly run 10Ks, I'm not trying to bench 225. I'm trying to wear a turtleneck and make it look good.
You know who could probably pull off a turtleneck?
You're going to make some sort of segue. Go ahead.
Kyler Murray.
Okay, there you go.
Which he could. You know, he's got a good jawline, though. Although I do think his voice sometimes is a little bit fake. Like, do you really speak that deep all the time or just in front of reporters? I have to know. Anyways, he's officially QB1 for the Vikings. We got the news yesterday. Anything in particular? Like, this was what we all expected it to be. Don't get me wrong. But we were talking earlier this week, John Jastrzemski and I, about some of the reports coming out of the weekend about how J.J. McCarthy wasn't going away and maybe he was actually making this a little bit more of a competition than you would have thought on the surface. And then ultimately Kevin O'Connell just decides to put it to bed and say, no, Kyler's going to be the guy.
Yeah, so is there some, I'll use an online term here for young people, is there some coping here with some J.J. McCarthy stands that maybe I'm just not – because I don't get that connect in terms of, to your point, there have been some rumblings maybe that J.J. McCarthy was outperforming him, and yet they name Kyler Murray the starter. Do we honestly believe that Kevin O'Connell would look at that dynamic, look at the guy that he handpicked and J.J. McCarthy, and say, no, I'm going to start this guy because we signed him this year regardless of what I'm seeing in camp? Like, doesn't that just not seem to add up?
Sure. But I think they – I mean, I think speaking of handpicked, yeah. Right, Kyler is a guy that he wanted to bring in to mm-hmm. be a part of this system.
And allegedly Justin Jefferson wanted him.
Yes, and so that was another thing that we discussed at least a little bit yesterday was I've seen a lot of the reports that McCarthy specifically and Justin Jefferson have not had the chemistry and connection on the field even in practice this year. And obviously we didn't see it on the field when they had the opportunities last year, but that – we have seen that with Kyler Murray. He seems to like him. Even when you're just looking at some of the like guys hanging out, talking around each other at training camp, Murray
just
and
guys
Jefferson
being
are there.
Dudes,
guys
huh?
being dudes, hanging out together. But this is
the greatest internet clips.
This is a
Steve Adazio, I think. Right?
It's obviously it's obviously a super talented wide receiver room though with Justin Jefferson, and you bring in even Juwan Jennings this year to join Jordan Addison. You have to be able to get them the ball, and if there's a thought process that Kyler is the guy that is going to have a better chance of doing that, then I understand it.
Yeah, I just look. I think, and again, this goes back to, I have some trepidation when it comes to this. I understand Kevin O'Connell's done a good job throughout his career with some of these quarterbacks. I also think that we've gone way too far in believing that he is just untouchable with the development of some of these signal callers. You know,
also everyone was crediting Daniel Jones' start of the season last year to him.
Drives me insane considering that Shane Steichen, former UNLV quarterback, has actually proven to be an adequate play caller and has done a pretty decent job. He got Gardner Minshew with a drop pass of the postseason a few years ago. Obviously the turnaround at the start of the season with Daniel Jones. And so I'm with you. That's where I'm at, where it's like we love him so much. We even have to give him credit for bringing in Daniel Jones for a cup of coffee, and he was like the fourth string practice squad guy, but he fixed him. Everything's fine. And yet, the guy that he handpicked had a historically bad EPA per dropback last season, had a turnover-worthy play rate of 4.8%, completed less than 60% of his passes. I just don't – I don't think that we should just blindly believe that KOC here is untouchable and is going to just immediately turn things around. And that's where, like, I get the I walk down the path with most people to a certain point. I blindly believe in this defense. I think that Flores is awesome, and I think they're going to be a very good defensive
team. Well,
and
apparently they've been hounding in training camp already, too.
See, okay. Here's the thing, and I think they're going to be good, but I'll take you back 2 years ago. The Raiders, there was this thought that the Raiders at camp, man, this defense is going to be great. Man, this defense is going to be tremendous. They have been awesome in camp. They've been hounding the offense. You know what turned out to be the truth? Gardner Minshew at AOC sucked. And so you don't want to maybe put too much into it because maybe the offense they're facing has been absolutely terrible this entire time. And maybe that's more representative of what we're seeing here. And it goes back to my original point.
The question is you just don't know which is which right now.
But that just goes back to my original point.
I tend to believe that Brian Flores' defense is going to be
better. Yeah, but my original point here is I have my trepidations with Minnesota just because I'm not buying that KOC is just going to blindly get the most out of Kyler Murray here. And I think there's a pretty good chance, similar to what we talked about with the Browns, is maybe we should accept the reality that the quarterback position is going to be a nightmare for the Vikings again this year,
yeah,
and that they might not be that good because their offense is going to be awful.
My trepidation with Kyler Murray is more just the injury factor and how year after year, the back end of the season, we see the fall off.
Yeah.
And obviously injuries have piled up for him too over the last couple of years. Last year it was the ankle or whatever, ACL prior to that. But regardless of actual season ending injuries, we still see the decline year after year. So why is that all of a sudden going to be better because you're in a new situation? I'm not so sure. I don't have any bets on the Vikings. I like the Lions in the division, so it's kind of just a stay away, kind of throwaway for me right now. But so many people seem to believe that Kyler Murray is going to have this resurgent season, and I'm just not so sure as well.
I mean, I think the one bet you could potentially think about is, you know, I go back to Kyler Murray and some of his tendencies in Arizona. He was like a high target, my guy type of dude,
Justin,
right?
Jefferson stuff.
So like Justin Jefferson, offensive player of the year, even if they struggle, if he puts up some really big numbers just because Kyler Murray is like funneling, just zeroing in and peppering him with targets and all that, that might be something that is potentially worth looking at. By the way, we should note first five loser. And by the way, the Phillies are going to get knocked around here. I think it's still, 5-1, bottom of the sixth.
Yeah, Cardinals it was tied at one in the fifth, and then Cardinals really pulled away here. Also, Twins pulling away a little bit in the top of seven. They're up 7-4 now on Baltimore. We're going to step aside. Thanks for hanging out with us. JVT will be back with you tomorrow. Follow the money coming up after this. Paulie Howard and Mark Melusis in for Mitch.
Oof.